We'll go to item six, George DeMarco.
Hope you feel well.
Thank you all. Thank you all for everything.
Get well.
Mr. DeMarco, this is consideration of whether his existing clam aquaculture operations qualify under regulation 4 VAC 20-335 pertaining to on-bottom aquaculture activities. He's also seeking after-the-fact authorization to retain a 6-inch raw water intake extending approximately 375 feet channelward of mean high water, as well as authorization to deploy on a seasonal basis approximately 1,300 linear feet of stake net for predator exclusion purposes around the perimeter of a 200,000 square foot clam aquaculture grow-out area adjacent to his property situated along Pepper Creek in Matthews County. Mr. DeMarco's project is located along the southeast shore of Pepper Creek at its confluence with the Mob Jack Bay near New Point Comfort in Matthews. This is New Point Comfort down here, Pepper Creek. Closer view of the topographic map. You note the shallow area surrounding the point. Site in question is located along here. In 2006, this picture is actually from June of 07, we received an inquiry from VIMS concerning what appeared to be a clam aquaculture operation at the mouth of Pepper Creek in Matthews County. The activity had been noted in their annual submerged aquatic vegetation surveys. VIMS was concerned because the activity appeared to have displaced an area of SAV. We reviewed the aerial photography from the annual surveys, and also we reviewed our oyster planting ground maps. We also flew over the site in September of 2006. Based on our review, we concluded that Mr. DeMarco had indeed deployed nets or cages on his leased oyster planting ground. We also found that he had deployed a vertical net perpendicular to the bottom around the perimeter of the operation, and apparently that net was being used as a predator exclusion net, assumably to keep townhouse rays out of the area. Fenced off area measured approximately 750 feet long by 250 feet wide. This is actually the grow out areas occurring in here, the little bit darker area. This is the predator exclusion net, about 250 feet out from shore there, 750, and then another 250. This picture was actually taken in May of 07, about a month prior to the previous picture. You'll note that the predator exclusion net is not deployed. Many of the nets are covered with a macroalgae, and the intake pipe is clearly visible in the picture here. We sent Mr. DeMarco a certified letter dated February 14, 2007, advising him that the structures had been deployed on his leased oyster planting ground constituted an illegal encroachment over state-owned submerged land. That letter also directed him to remove the illegal structures within 45 days. It's another image from June of 07. We met with Mr. DeMarco and his son Andrew on February 28th of 07. They explained that they believed that the planting of clams and the placement of the nets over the clams was authorized under our on-bottom shellfish aquaculture regulation. We explained that this regulation, which became effective in January of 1998, allows the placement of aquaculture structures on the bottom and extending up to 1 foot above the substrate. However, the regulation specifically excludes the placement of new aquaculture structures on existing stands of SAV. The DeMarcos argue that the area where their aquaculture is being conducted does not support significant SAV growth. Staff agreed to contact Dr. Orth of VIMS to arrange an on-site evaluation of the grow-out area. That site inspection was conducted on May 11th of 2007, at which time SAV was noted in the area. Mr. DeMarco submitted an application on May 16th of 07 requesting authorization to redeploy the net on a seasonal basis, as well as authorization to retain a 6-inch diameter water intake pipe extending approximately 375 feet channel or mean high water. He also asked the commission to determine whether or not his on-bottom aquaculture activities were authorized under the on-bottom shellfish aquaculture regulation. The predator exclusion net was deployed for at least part of the year during 2007, but it is not currently deployed at the site. As part of our review of the project, VIMS provided us a whole series of aerials from their annual SAV survey. I'd like to go through those. I'll move through them pretty quickly. They'll be available if anybody wants to look back at a particular year. They're important because they both show the history of the presence of SAV at the site, as well as the recent history with the aquaculture activity. As a little background, the darker area, this is the point of land. This is the project area located in here. Mr. DeMarco owns this point. The darker areas typically will depict the submerged aquatic vegetation. This is from 1989, 1990. It's 1991. It's a little bit darker, a little bit more difficult to interpret, but there is some darker areas in here. 1992, there may be a little bit of activity occurring right here. 1993, 94, there appears to be good coverage in the project area. 95, again, this is the area here. 1996. 97, SAV is still present. Has not been any noticeable aquaculture activity, although I think Mr. DeMarco has experimented for a long period of time. This is 1998. The SAV coverage appears to be more dense as you move toward the mouth of the creek in this particular year, and there appears to be some aquaculture nets deployed near the north of the point. Circle depicts a square here, and this is a little bit closer view of it up in here. Oops. This is the coverage map. They prepare an annual report. This is the map from 1998. This is the project area here. Gray represents the presence of SAV. The on-bottom regulation also became effective on January of 1998. So also during this year, the on-bottom regulation went into effect. And it states no new structures are placed, may be placed on existing stands of SAV. I've included that as, I believe, item number 6 in your packet, that on-bottom regulation. This is 1998. SAV is still present. There are two areas where aquaculture is apparent, one located on the north end of the point, and one over here to the west side. It's the coverage map from 1999. The dark green, you'll note, is the heavier coverage density, 70 to 100%. This is year 2000, what was going on here? Not sure what just happened here. Yeah, that should go on. This is 2000 aerial. A little bit of activity off of the West Point again. And this is the coverage map from 2000. Again, in this case, the darker area shows the denser. There's even some area up in the up in Pepper Creek. 2001, or actually only apparent activity again here is on the west side. The coverage map from 2001, you'll note it actually surrounds the point in this year and further up into Pepper Creek. sure what's going on here. This is 2002. There appears to be a dense bed in the project area. You'll also note this is the first year that aquaculture activity was apparent in the project area. This area here, row here, and this is the water intake line right here, which is here on the big picture. There's still a little bit of activity on the west side of the point. This is the coverage map, represents about what we saw, dense coverage in the project area. This is 2003. VIMS actually had aerials taken in June and October of this year. The area here has expanded somewhat, and then west point, part off of the west is still present. This is later in that year, October of 2003. The aerial showed it being a little bit less dense. That's also reflected in the coverage map. Darn it. I think some of the things I linked to are bringing that PowerPoint up. It's the project area. It's expanded further down this area. Again, the dark areas are SAV around the site. It's off the west side of the point. Coverage map showing dense stand of SAV in the project area. 2005, you can note the predator exclusion net was deployed in 2005. SAV. This is the coverage map from 2005. SAV is present but less dense along the northwest side of the point near the aquaculture clam beds. This is 2006. There's very little SAV present. The predator exclusion net appears to be deployed around both aquaculture sites. There's a little circle here and up here. Dr. Worth attributes the dramatic loss of SAV coverage to heat stress that occurred during in 2005. This is the 2006 aerial. It's the coverage map from 2006. According to the 2006 SAV report, there was a 25% reduction in SAV coverage between 2005 and 2006. This image was from 2007. Does depict some recovery in this area. And the aquaculture activity appears to only be present now in the current project area. This is a preliminary coverage map from the 2007 SAV report. In a letter dated February 8th, Dr. Worth of VIMS described the annual SAV monitoring program he has conducted since 1984. He describes the SAV beds at the mouth of Pepper Creek in the vicinity of the aquaculture operation as consisting of eelgrass and widgeongrass, with eelgrass dominating in the deeper waters to a depth of about 1 meter. He said the widgeongrass dominates the shallow water and extends landward to near the mean low water mark, but neither persist in the intertidal zone. He also explains that during their 20-plus years of monitoring, the SAV beds have been quite dynamic, especially in 2005 when heat stress killed many of the plants. He said the area has been recovering steadily and that the overall pattern has been one of SAV presence along the lower shores of Pepper Creek every year. Finally, he stated that locating the aquaculture operation in the intertidal or very shallow subtidal region or further into Pepper Creek would minimize the adverse impacts on SAV. This is a plan view drawing from Mr. DeMarco's application. I've got that highlighted here. This is a closer view of the plan view. The green depicts the predator exclusion net. The red is the intake, and the yellow represents about the area that's actually being occupied by on-bottom clam nets. The predator exclusion net around the perimeter of the area encloses about a 200,000 square foot area, approximately 4.6 acres. The area that's actually on under the on-bottom nets is about half of that. This is a cross-sectional drawing of the water intake. It's another aerial from June of last year. In addition to the letter we received from Dr. Worth, we received a typical VIM shoreline report dated November 30th of 07 for the after-the-fact request to retain the water intake pipe and the proposal to redeploy the predator exclusion net around the perimeter of the operation. They stated that the pipe would displace about 11 square feet of vegetated wetlands and 190 square feet of subaqueous bottom. They said that elevating the pipe would reduce those impacts, but they noted that it might be impractical. With regard to using the net as a predator exclusion net, they noted that the device will isolate about 200,000 square foot area of submerged land, submerged and wetland habitat, not only from cownose rays, but from other marine organisms. If permitted, they recommended that it be reduced to the minimum size necessary. The Department of Conservation and Recreation noted the presence of a bald eagle nest in the project vicinity and recommended coordination with Game and Inland Fisheries. They did not anticipate any adverse impacts on their programs. We received an email dated March 17th of this year from Game and Inland Fisheries. They expressed a possible concern regarding the entanglement of animals in the predator exclusion net, but they are still evaluating the possible effects on additional information that we just recently received regarding the size of the mesh. No state agencies provided any other comments. This is a 2002 aerial, Vigen aerial of the project site. All of the activities are located on oyster planting ground that was first leased to Mr. DeMarco in 1969. In reviewing the annual VIMS SAB aerials, the first apparent aquaculture on-bottom operation occurred around 1998. There are small patches of activity in each of the subsequent years with significant expansions in 2003 and 2004. The water intake line is first visible in the 2002 aerial photos. Mr. DeMarco claims to have approximately 3 million clams planted under the nets and that his typical grow-out time is approximately 4 years. This is longer than the typical grow-out time experienced by the Eastern Shore growers and even for previous operations on the York River. He noted, however, that he prefers to grow a slightly larger product because there are so many small clams on the market. He said the clams are typically harvested by rake. We did not receive any comments from any adjoining property owners in response to the public notice. I've used that same aerial and have done an overlay of Mr. DeMarco's oyster planting ground lease in yellow. The actual operation is being conducted in this area right here. This is another one from 2007. There are several issues that must be addressed by the Commission concerning this project. The first and most important is whether or not the on-bottom aquaculture activity is authorized under our on-bottom shellfish aquaculture regulation. Based upon staff's review of the site and the evaluation conducted by Dr. Orth, it's apparent that beds of SAB have persisted at the site prior to the initiation of any significant aquaculture activity. Although there was a dramatic die-off of SAB in 2005, the areas surrounding the operation are recovering. Given the presence of SAB at the project site, we're of the opinion that the aquaculture activities are not authorized by the on-bottom shellfish aquaculture regulation. If SAB is present at the site and the activity is not authorized by the on-bottom regulation, then the deployment of nets over the planted clams is a violation of Chapter 12. In that case, the Commission could either direct removal of the netting or agree to accept an after-the-fact application to allow the activity to continue with some conditions or other circumstances. We certainly recognize the numerous potential economic and environmental benefits associated with commercial shellfish production, but SAB provides crucial habitat for a variety of species, including the commercially important blue crabs. SAV is also listed under Section 28.2-1205A of the Virginia Code as one of the specific factors the Commission is charged with considering when evaluating an application for a permit to use state-owned bottomlands. Staff believes it's critical to avoid impacts to SAV to the maximum extent practicable. Given the VIM's evaluation of the site, and after reviewing Mr. DeMarco's oyster lease, it appears that the activity could be relocated further into the creek to avoid the more persistent beds of SAV. Accordingly, we recommend the Commission direct removal of the cover nets from their current location, but allow Mr. DeMarco to submit an application to conduct that activity on the most upstream section of the lease. A portion of the area may even be able to be worked under the on-bottom regulation. Given the value of clams currently planted, we would recommend Mr. DeMarco be given 2 years to vacate the current area and allow him to grow out and harvest the existing clams. Mr. DeMarco has continued to plant new clams in the area while we have been reviewing this application. If the Commission agrees to let Mr. DeMarco harvest the crop that is currently planted, we recommend that you specifically prohibit the covering of any of the new clams with the protective netting. Be happy to answer any questions I may have. Let me add regarding the intake. Since the impacts associated with water intake appear to be relatively minor, we would recommend approval of an after-the-fact request to retain that pipe with the imposition of triple permit fees and triple royalties as provided for in the code. Given the potential environmental impacts and potential impact on other state waters, staff is unable to recommend approval of the predator exclusion net. Now I'll be happy to answer any questions. Sorry that was such a long presentation, but I thought it was important for you to see the history of the SAV at the site.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. A couple questions, Chip. Can you show us a graphic of which portion of the lease you thought would be appropriate or you staff can recommend for grow out?
There has been some SAV over years up in this area right here, but it has not been nearly as persistent as back in this area, so probably in this area.
Okay, and what is your view of the fact that some of this, I mean, it seems that some of this activity occurred at least on a pilot basis prior to perhaps the development of the regulation. I mean, the regulation was developed, was it not, in 1998, I believe you said?
1998, it was effective January of 98.
And the language in the regulation says, no new structures shall be placed on existing stands of submerged aquatic vegetation. So if there was some activity at
there,
the site.
Get back to 1998. I was going through so many of them at once there, but this was pretty much the extent of activity in 98 that we were able to pick out from the aerials. It's this small area here. We would be saying, you know, he could work in this area. That area did continue to be occupied. He probably could continue to use that if it's remained consistent throughout the years.
Thank
under
you.
The on-bottom regulation.
Anybody else have any questions? Thank you.
Mm-hmm.
The applicant or someone? Welcome again, sir.
Good afternoon. Seems like only this morning. John Daniel on behalf of George DeMarco. I'm really going to take my seat. I just want to take this opportunity to introduce you to my colleague, Ms. Lynn Rohde, who's going to present the case in chief for Mr. DeMarco.
Welcome, sir.
Thank you. Good afternoon. My name is Lynn Rohde. I'm with Troutman Sanders, and I'm here on behalf of George DeMarco. As a preliminary matter, we agree with staff's recommendation that an after-the-fact permit be granted for the water intake pipe. We disagree with staff that there are potential negative impacts associated with Mr. DeMarco's seasonal use of his ray exclusion net. And in just a minute, I'll ask Mr. DeMarco himself to talk with you and answer any questions you have. But essentially, the ray exclusion net merely prevents counter's rays from coming in, destroying the nets and eating the clams. And as Mr. DeMarco can tell you, it does not exclude crabs, as is very apparent when you go through the site and see the nets. As Mr. Nykerk pointed out, the main issue before you is whether Mr. DeMarco may continue his operations under the on-bottom shellfish aquaculture regulation. I will keep my remarks brief and ask Mr. DeMarco to talk with you himself, but I did want to outline for the Commission why we feel he is entitled to operate under the general permit. As Mr. Nykerk pointed out, the regulation went into effect January 1st, 1998. The general authorization for the placing of shellfish aquaculture structures, such as the nets used by Mr. DeMarco, contains the requirement, as was pointed out, that no new structures shall be placed on existing stands of submerged aquatic vegetation. Mr. DeMarco's clam aquaculture operation meets this requirement for two reasons. First, he began clam aquaculture in this very area before 1998. Second, there was not submerged aquatic vegetation in the areas where his nets are currently when he first placed the nets in those areas in the fall of 2002. George DeMarco was the first commercial pilot plant. Started the first commercial pilot plant oyster hatchery in the bay in the late 1960s. In the mid-1980s, he placed nets and brood clams in the area near Pepper Creek, where he currently grows clams. In the mid-1990s, he started to try experimental plots of planting clams. He planted those clams in areas that include where his nets currently are in about 1995. He started with these small experimental plots and included the areas near Pepper Creek as well as Mobjack Bay to the west. The activities occurred before the regulation went into effect January 1st, 1998. Several large clam aquaculture operations, including those in Cherrystone Creek and areas on the western shore, were all grandfathered in under these regulations. There's no reason that we can think of why Mr. DeMarco should be treated any differently than these larger operations on the eastern shore. By 2002, Mr. DeMarco had abandoned several areas where he began these experimental plots, including areas in Mobjack Bay and to the west. The reason he abandoned those other plots, and as we saw in Mr. Nykerk's slides, there were two areas, one to the west near Mobjack Bay and one where his nets currently are near Pepper Creek. He actually abandoned the plots near Mobjack Bay, and what you continued to see after 2002 were just some experimental ray exclusion net plots. He wasn't actually growing clams there anymore, and the reason he moved his operations out of the Mobjack Bay area was because there was SAV. And as Mr. DeMarco has explained to me, he can't grow his clams where there's any significant amount of SAV. And that's because, as he told me, you have to place your nets flush against the sand to keep the crabs out. If they're not flush, if there's SAV present, they get pushed up, and the crabs can get underneath the nets and eat the clams. And on top of that, trying to pull a rake by hand through SAV is nearly impossible, and he couldn't harvest the clams. So what he found was that where there was SAV, he couldn't grow his clams. That's why in 2002, after having experimental plots in both the Pepper Creek and the Mobjack Bay locations since 1995, he actually abandoned his clam-growing plots near Mobjack Bay and moved them all to their current location. The reason he did that was because there was not any significant amount of SAV. So he could grow his clams. He could have his nets flush against the sand. And they've been there ever since. What there was, and there still is plenty of, is algae growing on top of these bottom nets. And like SAV, algae shows up on satellite images as vegetation. Like SAV, in addition, the algae provide abundant edge and other habitat for crabs and other animals. And that's readily apparent to anyone who goes out to Mr. DeMarco's site. Staff's concern that blue crab habitat is lost due to Mr. DeMarco's operation is belied by the numerous crabs that are found throughout Mr. DeMarco's site and take refuge in the thick algae that grows on his on-bottom nets. And in fact, they're protected by the ray exclusion nets, which he puts up seasonally. So this is a very abundant, thriving habitat. In addition, Mr. DeMarco's clams, as Mr. Nykirk rightly pointed out, provide water quality benefits. They clean the water. It's my understanding the purpose of the laws here at issue is to promote viable aquaculture while still protecting the valuable resources of the bay. I don't think it's to promote SAV at all costs and irregardless of whether there's any habitat concerns or water quality concerns. What we have here is Mr. DeMarco's clam operations providing habitat, providing water quality benefits, and continuing the kind of responsible small aquaculture operations I think we all want to see survive in the bay. Mr. Nykirk mentioned VIM's recommendation that the activities be relocated either further into Pepper Creek or closer to the shore, and unfortunately neither of these options are possible. Salinity changes dramatically as you move any further into Pepper Creek. Salinity drops. And Mr. DeMarco can tell you exactly, he's tested it all. The clams can't survive with such freshwater intrusion. So that's why he is where he is. He can't go up into the creek. And he can't move his clams closer to the shore because in the winter, any closer in freezes and his clams would die. So he is where he is because he has to be there. Shutting down Mr. DeMarco's clam aquaculture business not only would be contrary to the law because he falls under the general permit regulations, but also just doesn't make sense from economic, environmental, or policy perspectives. And we ask that you continue to allow him to continue to operate under the general permit. And I just have a couple photos I'd like to show you very quickly, if I can figure out how to work this. Just put them on there. There we go. Okay. This, you can see the date on this is very recent. Well, maybe it's hard to tell. That's 3/08, so that's just March this year. And this is what you're looking at is low tide and Mr. DeMarco's clam aquaculture operations. And you can see here are the nets that he uses, and you can see the brown areas. That's the algae that grows on the nets, and when the tide rises, obviously, it floats up. And I was out at Mr. DeMarco's site just a couple weeks ago, and I walked all these nets. And I have to tell you, I understand that seasonally SAV changes and all that, but there was almost no SAV anywhere. And what there was were just sprigs every now and again, and those sprigs were equally as plentiful where the nets are as they were outside of the nets. There just wasn't really any SAV that I could tell that was being disturbed. I have one more photo from this same, just from this month. Again, you can see what the nets look like. There is no ray exclusion net right now because that was taken down. And the ray exclusion net goes up from about mid-May to about November 1, typically. Then I'd like to show you just a couple other quick pictures. This is a little bit smaller. I'm sorry about that. But this is from March, the same time last year, 07. And again, these are the nets, and you can see the algae on the nets, and this is the surrounding bottom. Very little to no SAV present. And here's another angle from this year, just of where the pipe is, and that shows you algae on the pipe, not any real apparent SAV around the pipe. That's all I have for now. I'm happy to answer any questions.
Could you pass those pictures up?
Yes, sir, of course.
I have a question.
Yeah, we're going to do that. Okay. Does anyone have any questions? Okay, I'm going to start on this end with Mr. Taggart.
The SAV now, you're saying that it's devoid totally of SAV, but our staff says that there is SAV there. Now, how do you reconcile that? And are you sure that you're really qualified to be an SAV?
I am not an SAV expert by any means. From my observation, and I'm sorry, I tried to make that clear, I did not see abundant SAV, and I don't think the pictures show abundant SAV. There are sprigs of SAV. They're occasional. And from what I understand, SAV changes, and obviously the VIMS and VMRC folks can speak more to this, as can Mr. DeMarco, but the abundance changes, and we saw that in the satellite images. And from what I understand, in the fall, there is often far less SAV than there is in the summer. So when Mr. DeMarco went in the fall of 2002, there very well may have been much less SAV than there would have been in the summer months. So I think the satellite images are all taken, as I understand it, when the SAV is most abundant during the year, and that's typically around June. So all these images that we were seeing were, I believe, from the June timeframe, when SAV is most abundant. Now, in the fall, that might look completely different. And these photos I showed you were taken in March, so it's a different time of year. That's the best explanation I have, but I'm happy to let anyone else talk.
Mr. Robbins?
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. I have a question regarding your salinity comment, but I would ask, Chip, do you mind putting the 1998 picture back up there? Is that possible? And my question would be, and this gets to the alternative sighting possibility, I guess. There's a photograph indicating that there was activity at the site in 1998. And my question is, if the activity going forward that's permitted were limited to that area on up into the creek on the lease, that is, from where we can document that in 1998 there was activity in that photograph, all the way out to the corner of the lease. Are you suggesting that the salinity is substantially different at that point where aquaculture appeared to have been conducted successfully than it is elsewhere on the property?
Well, no, I believe what the staff is talking about. Thank you. I'm sorry. I believe what they're talking about is moving it up closer to the mouth of the creek. Apparently, the freshwater intrusion, and I'll actually maybe ask George to talk more to this, comes up sort of like this. And where his operation ends now is stopped basically because it's sort of where that line is, where the freshwater intrusion stops. And the salinity drops dramatically in this area from in this area.
But you don't have any... Do you have any salinity evidence for us to consider?
Do you mind if I ask Mr. DeMarco to address that?
Yes. You'd come up. Hand up. You swear to tell the truth, the whole truth, not the truth.
Yes, sir,
you.
I do.
Okay, and would you state your name, please?
George DeMarco.
Okay, I should go right ahead.
The question about salinity data, yes, I do keep a running log. And I know it's a bit of a stretch, but if you'll notice, the creek... Let's see, I don't know how to use these things, so I better not. But at any rate, Ginger Creek goes on up this way. And the large flux of fresh water that comes down comes out that way and makes its way out into the creek. And there is a substantial difference in salinity from one area to the other. We did a planting this past fall with some sea clams I bought from Seaside. And those clams did noticeably poorer in the red circle area there than they did farther down, and we even did a trial plot out in Mobject. So it makes a difference where you put your where you do your planting. And another big difference is where the kind of broodstock. If you can get broodstock from our area, which is sometimes difficult to get the hatcheries to produce, but the broodstock from our area does a whole lot better in an area of low salinity than it does anywhere else. If I make myself clear.
Thank you.
Mm-hmm. Who's on this end? Have a question. I've got a question for
Chip, have you or your anybody from your staff or VIMS been out there, or are we relying on the aerial photographs?
I've actually been out there twice.
Okay.
And Dr. Worth, I accompanied Dr. Worth when he went out. I should have mentioned earlier that Dr. Worth could not be here because he had knee surgery about 10 days ago. But Dr. Moore from VIMS is here and is also an SAD expert, so he can
answer
those questions.
So the aerial distributions of SAV are close to what it appears?
Yes, and that's kind of why I threw on the coverage maps after each of the aerials to show that what you're seeing here is also what they're putting in their report. And as I understand it, a good number of those are ground truth. From time to time, whenever they have a question, they ground truth it. And it's even broken down into species, and obviously you can't tell species from the aerials.
Follow up on. Were you out in March when they, or anybody from VIMS out in March when these photos were taken?
I was out last week. And then I was also out about May of last year, I believe.
I know the pictures are, mm-hmm. a slice of the area, and it did look like mud flats with no SAV. And I mean, how does that compare with what we're talking about from the satellite photo?
Ken, you want to address?
Maybe I can answer some of those questions. Ken, I'm Ken Moore from VIMS. I've actually, in 1990, did this whole series of transects out here for actually ground surveying our aerial photography. And we picked this spot because it was one of the densest beds in the Lower Bay. And, of course, the Mobject Bay region in the Lower Bay is one of our SAV sort of preserves where we've managed to keep it. In the shallow areas, what we have is, just like we have over in Cherrystone, and I was involved in a project looking at the impacts of Cherrystone aqua farms with SAV a number of years ago. The shallow areas vegetated with widgeon grass, and as we mentioned, as it goes into a little deeper water, we get the eelgrass. Well, widgeon grass doesn't reach its maximum abundance until about August of each year. So if you went into those shallows in March, you would really see nothing except a few sprigs. And the deeper areas, and so when these are taken, they underestimate the abundance of widgeon grass because they're typically taken in the Lower Bay, the photography in June. So widgeon grass is still developing. So those shallow areas that look a little bit sparse would look much darker come August because they can't fly. We can't fly twice a year or more than once a year to do the whole bay. So we underestimate the abundance of widgeon grass, but we've actually done transects here and actually map those. So anyway, relative to why you don't see any in these early season pictures, that's one reason. The other is, of course, we had a big dieback in 2005 from this real long heat event that we have, and so the abundances are lower than typically we find. So if you look at the dark areas, that's more typical of what we find in this region.
So I guess then this area here that is light in color here, as opposed to this dark area here, this is probably more eelgrass.
Correct.
And this area here, which kind of looks like that there's not a lot of SAVs, is probably is what you're saying is
widgeon grass.
Widgeon grass.
That's why the coverage that Chip showed actually runs to the shore.
Right.
Integrates that. So because Bob, we know what switches over, and that's why we've actually done on ground surveying. Not only at this site, but many, many sites throughout the bay to calibrate that photography.
Yeah, one more question. You mentioned you did a study with Cherrystone and the effects of Cherrystone on SAV. Can you give
Correct.
Us the quick summary?
Yeah, the quick summary was that what we were really looking for was whether or not they cleared up the water. And and what we found is we really couldn't find any appreciable clearing of the water because the water flows over these areas so much, so quickly. The beds themselves, though, are point sources for nitrogen because the clams pump out lots of nitrogen, mainly because they're so dense. That's what promotes the algal growth over the nets. They're taking up the nitrogen that's coming off these beds and flourishing. And then typically what happens is that they have to clear that algae off because much of it is this stuff called sea lettuce, ulva, that'll, if it gets warmer, will settle down. And that stuff then drifts off and accumulates in areas. And it's not anything like, I mean, what we're trying to keep down in the bay is macroalgal growth and promote seagrass growth. So there's some indirect effects of these beds that goes beyond just covering the bottom. And when you talk to the people that are doing the work, they actually like having the SAD around because it tends to keep the sediments during storms from washing onto their beds. And these are the guys that actually have to go out there and clean it. So it baffles and holds down the sediments. And so, you know, the interaction between the two is, at least from the clam side, is good, particularly over in Cherrystone. So anyway, we found that, you know, that other than the indirect effects and the smothering effects, of which we found no evidence that eelgrass or widgeongrass will grow under these, you know, through these meshes, through these beds. Particularly for one thing, they have to continually clean them. But it's so dense and there's the clams are packed in that you don't get much SAB growth through them. So.
Any other questions, Mr. Robbins?
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. Could you comment on the salinity issue as it relates to that site?
Yeah, actually, when we had heard that, Chip and I actually looked. We actually run continuous monitors where we can track salinity. And what we found in this region, that salinity changes on the order in the open areas about a half a part per thousand per kilometer. So, you know, that's kind of, so every 1,000 yards, it would change one half. And I think perhaps it was reported that there's a 4 part per thousand change over a couple hundred yards. And so that would be, you know, we know that happens at like a low tide where you might get fresher water coming out, and then if the tide changes and you get a surge of higher salinity water coming in, that any one point throughout the day you may get a salinity variation. But it's highly unlikely that you would see that big of a change over that short of a distance. Perhaps way up a creek where you would get fresh water coming off the land, there's a possibility that in a short distance you could get that. But anyway, we've run not up in his creek, but along here. And that's sort of the estimates we get.
Thank you. I have a question for Mr. Nyker.
Okay, Mr. Nyker. Mr. Fox?
Chip, it's my understanding, correct me if I'm wrong, that wherever there were beds, clam beds in 1998, that's the area that would be grandfathered. Is that correct?
Essentially, that's what was done with the regulation. It was unclear prior to the regulation. Activity was occurring, you know, both on the eastern shore and on this side of the bay. It's a little unclear of what was allowed to be done on leased oyster ground. You know, they're saying, well, we're growing clams. That's what you lease the ground for. But there were structures that were being placed on that ground, which was not the original intent, but appeared to be an acceptable thing because it wasn't blocking navigation and such. It would be reasonable to protect that product down there. So we came up with a regulation that allowed structures to come up 1 foot off of the bottom, with a couple of things, you know, provided it wasn't interfering with navigation, you know, if it was in a real shallow area, and that happened to be the channel, couldn't do that. And provided it was not, you know, the operation did not expand into any new areas of SAB. So they were essentially given the footprint of what you had, because those areas, you know, had been occupied for quite some time in many places, especially over on the eastern shore.
Yeah. Well, I think one of the statements that Ms. Rohde made was that the where they were in 1998 is equivalent to where they are today, and I think the photographs show that that's not the case.
I don't think the photograph shows that. They may have experimented in various areas throughout, but it, you know, not nearly as expansive as what they've got now.
Okay.
Any other questions for Mr. Knight?
No, thanks.
May I just address that at one point? My point was the location of the nets was the same area. They were not as many nets. It was not as wide an area, but it was the same area. And I don't think there's anything that I know of in the regulation that restricts the grandfathering to one particular net that was there. I would doubt that the Cherrystone Creek operations haven't changed or moved or expanded since the regulation was in place. And I don't know of any particular language or restrictions that says that you can't move your net within the same area or add a net to it. Maybe I'm wrong, but that would mean that all of the other clam operations that were grandfathered in have not changed at all either since 1998. I don't think that's the case.
Any other questions for Ms. Ritter? Okay, Mr. Morocco, do you have anything else?
I would like to address the issue of the enclosure, cow nose ray exclusion net. I take issue with the statement from FIMS saying that it excludes organisms that are important to the surrounding area. We haven't found that to be the case at all. The only organisms which have been excluded pretty much are the cow-nosed rays and large fish. The area inside of the net really is a sanctuary. We find, at least this past summer, many, many small crabs. When I say small crabs, I'm talking crabs 1/4 inch to crabs of 1.5 inches, just thick inside the net, the enclosure net. I think there's a good reason for that. There's a lot of food there. There are no predators, and I guess they're happy here. They wouldn't be there. There are plenty of other bottom-dwelling organisms, the worms and the exotic-looking crustacea that have found a place there. There's a reason for that also. The clams have stabilized the bottom. You have an area there that is not nearly as stirred up and turned over by storms because of the fact you've got clams and clam nets there. So if anything, I think you should be considering you should allow something like that simply because of what it does to aid the production of the kind of things you're trying to protect. The net itself, when we pull the net in the fall, early November, is just loaded with seahorses, not loaded, perhaps a dozen or so. At certain times of the summer, you will see a lot of spade fish. I've counted perhaps several hundred spade fish, juveniles, feeding on the net. So I think the net itself is as well as what it does to protect the area, is very much a positive, environmentally speaking. The pipeline feeds 50 raceways. This past summer we had 100,000 triploid Crassostrea virginica growing in the raceways. The first time we did them in raceways, they did beautifully, and they're now outside the creek in that area where we, north of the point there, where the fresh water is not going to be a factor. I understand and respect what Dr. Moore said about changes in salinity, and it is true, absolutely, that when you get that big influx of fresh water during heavy runoff, that's when you're going to see the big drop in salinity. But otherwise, and we will see between 3 and 4 parts per thousand difference between, say, where that point is and around where the circle is. I don't know why, but that's the way it works. And I don't check it more than once a day, so it's possible that high tide it would be not quite as much difference. Let's see, that covers the pipeline, the surround net. So far as Dr. Moore made an excellent point, and I think that there is widgeon grass growing inside the area, which may not be apparent now, but it comes out in August and September. That's true. This past summer, I saw more widgeon grass inside the surround area than I've ever seen before. So that's a positive, and we're glad to see it. We like to see grass there for the simple reason that, as he stated, it slows down wave action and prevents beds from being covered over with sand. So far as eelgrass is concerned, I've got pictures here from 07 and 08, taken in March, and you really don't, these are 07 pictures, you don't see a great deal of difference between 07 and 08 when it comes to the prevalence of eelgrass. There just hasn't been that much change. It's interesting here that I've got some photographs that I took when I flew over the island when I bought it. In '67, you will see that there was not a lot of eelgrass around the shore. I've got some 6 pictures here. Here's another very good one. So there was not a lot of eelgrass around the shore in 67. I don't know where we put the... here's 90. This photograph of 90 doesn't show a great deal of grass, and that was taken 060190. Does not show a lot of eelgrass in the area that we're cultivating now. '05, as you know, we had pretty much of a complete die-off, and that was only, that was August. By mid-August, we had this huge die-off. But in, and I don't have the green picture here, but in May or June, let's see, we have a date here of 98. I would say that it was pretty similar to what we're seeing now. So, yes, there was some eelgrass there in 05 in May and June, but by the time August came along, it was all gone. You should be asking the question, if I were in your shoes, I would certainly be, did Mr. DeMarco plant clams in eelgrass? I can assure you that we did not. In 2002, we had more eelgrass in the creek than we have ever had because of the low runoff situation. There's very little runoff, not much nutrients going into the water. You're going to see a big surge in grass, except that we didn't have that much of it this past summer. We had very little runoff. We waited until October, November to plant. We went out there with hand rakes and scratched out all of the macrophytes, the algae, and then we did our planting. The reason you do that is because, sure, you're going to find crabs stuck around wherever there's grass, but we made sure that when we did that, there was no grass where we planted. I can assure you that no clams have ever been planted on top of grass. What happens typically is that grass will defoliate and die off in August. We wait until November, early November, late October to do our planting. Yes, sir.
Anybody have any questions for Mr. Smith?
As far as your operation goes, can you give us a brief, you know, how large of operation, how many clams
Right now we've got
how many employees?
Right now we've got about 3 million clams overboard. I think I've got about 1,750,000 seed clams overboard, which I purchased this past summer. And the rest are market size, and we're selling off of those. We sell pretty much in this area. We are trying to do a lot of direct marketing ourselves. We also have oysters growing. I don't know if I told you that or not. We've got oysters, areca, as well as natural stripe. We utilize a lot of natural stripe, and that's growing out mobjack beyond the grass. So we're trying to grow everything we possibly can grow there.
And the number of employees that you...
It's my son and I and a few part-timers. We have, my grandson and perhaps 3 other part-timers come down on weekends to help us out.
Right. Thank you.
Yes, sir.
Anybody else have any other questions? Thank you. The pictures that you displayed, we're going to need to keep those for 30 days as part of the...
Yes. Which pictures are you referring to, the 67 pictures?
The one that you displayed when you were talking.
Okay.
Okay.
Not a problem. Do you want me to leave them with you here now?
Yes, leave them.
Okay.
Mr. Bird, you have to wrap up.
I can find them here. I don't know where I put them. No, that's the old 67s.
Yeah,
not over here somewhere.
And then you had a great picture, and that was it.
Oh, there they are. Okay, yes. Okay, these are the ones. There they are.
Okay.
Make sure that they've got 08s in there as well.
Yeah, we have those up here.
We have those up here.
Okay, well, then you'll have to give them the 08s, Glenn.
They have them.
Okay.
Thank you.
Thank you. I really do appreciate the opportunity to come here and present my case in front of you all.
Okay, Ms. Rhodes, if you'll wrap it up.
Just briefly, I think that Mr. DeMarco is grandfathered in under the regulation. I think he is responsible very environmentally sound operation, and it's good policy to promote his kind of aquaculture business in the bay. We hope that you would allow him to continue to operate. Thank you.
Thank you.
Okay, the matter is before the commission. Robbins?
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. I had a couple more follow-up questions. One for our council, if I could. I wanted to ask Carl for his view on this aspect of the regulation, where it says no new structures shall be placed on existing strands of submerged aquatic vegetation. Again, if that was written in 1998, how you might view this grandfather issue?
I think, first of all, I would defer to any consistent agency interpretation of that. Not having heard one, just looking at the language.
That's my fault.
I had the regulation here in front of me, but I've misplaced it. I don't know how frequently. Well, first of all, the area, and it seems ordinarily when something is grandfathered, when they're talking about staying on bottom lands, we're talking about the footprint of the area that a structure is located on. That's been my understanding. And as far as...
Can you speak up a little bit?
Okay, when we're talking about the area that might be grandfathered, my understanding, in the absence of some agency, consistent agency interpretation of this, is that in other areas, we're talking about the footprint of the structure that existed before. Now, as far as any no new structures, I don't know the practice in the industry of how often these little structures, the less than 1 foot structures, and the nets are replaced. If you're talking about new structures, it seems to me that we're talking about replacement structures, and that's industry practice as far as I could determine. I don't know that we've heard any questions like that. That's the best I can do for you.
Thank you, Carl. My other question, Chip, do you mind putting the graphic of the lease back up there again? Sure. Thank you. It seems to me, Mr. Chairman, that the we basically have a collision here of interest. One is that certainly aquaculture represents a very high use of the state's resources, and the other is the fact that at this site there has been a persistent history of SAV, and SAV is indeed it's a critically important habitat. It's important habitat for juvenile blue crabs, as staff has pointed out. It's something the state's committed to protecting, and I think the regulation requires that we appropriately consider it. And yet, as they pointed out, or as the applicant pointed out, certain operations were grandfathered on the Eastern Shore back in 1998. So there's a tension here, but I think it, in the end, it would be appropriate to try to simultaneously protect the SAV to the greatest degree possible and yet accommodate what has been an ongoing aquaculture operation. I think, as our council has pointed out, part of the operation might be considered to be grandfathered, and yet we've heard from staff and based on the testimony we've heard from the applicant as well that the operation has expanded over time. So some of this has been additive since the regulation was written, since 1998. But it seems to me that it would be appropriate to certainly allow the discharge pipe to exist, but to perhaps confine the planning of plans to some portion of the upstream aspect of the lease that would perhaps include, at a minimum, that area that the photographs documented had aquaculture activity in 1998. Perhaps the upstream 30% of the lease, something on that order. I'd be glad to hear from other members, but it seems to me that if we can try to accommodate the two, and protect the densest areas of SAV, but allow aquaculture to occur in those areas where it's lower. That would be the best outcome here.
I'm not sure I understand what you're saying would be the location. In other words,
the upstream portion, that is on the graphic we have, the upper right-hand quadrant, basically. And I don't know that we have a decent landmark to go by.
Let's put the slide up that shows where his clams are now, so we can identify what you feel is.
I'll get back to most recent aerial. One thing I do need to point out, and this is such a strange project that you're reviewing in the way that it's going, because it's a regulation and there's some application. There is, if it doesn't meet the on-bottom regulation, there is no application for the regular subaqueous permit for the growing of the clams on the bottom, which is what we feel would be necessary if the regulation doesn't apply. I think you could give him a understanding that that area might be something he could apply for, but we couldn't actually approve that portion today unless it was determined that there was no SAV there and it met the regulation up at that end.
You're talking about going back to 1998, that he would be grandfathered.
Well, the only part that would, you know, was there in 1998 was that small square. If you were to approve some portion up in here, or say that was acceptable, we still would need to run an advertisement.
Can we go back and put up where his clams are today?
That is. This is 2007. This is the area occupied here.
Which is the same as the picture to the right.
Yes. Yeah. This is just a closer view of it.
And that shows the net too, right?
Yes. This is the inshore boundary of the nets, on bottom nets, and then this is the perimeter net, exclusion net.
So the clams are just on the far right, on the upper.
No, the clams are actually planted from here all the way down to here.
Okay.
Which on this picture is here.
Mr. Robbins, if you're looking for a dividing line, it would appear that the pipeline would be a dividing line. So you could be upstream of the pipeline.
I think you're right. That probably, if I can follow up, that does appear to coincide roughly with the downstream border, perhaps, of where the operation was located in 1998. So that would probably be a fair dividing line.
So everything up from the pipeline, you would say, would come into the 1998.
Correct. If that would be under the existing regulation. In other words, if we determine that would be covered under the existing regulation, then that would be allowed to occur without a permit. Is that correct?
If you felt that there was no SAV there, I don't know that it necessarily meets the on-bottom regulation. What we were kind of hoping was that you giving some indication that you might issue a regular permit for that, for some or any area in there. And
but that process would require coming back with an application. Is that correct? Okay. Well, I think perhaps that's the best guidance then that we.
Can I just ask a question?
Sure.
Okay. I have lost the bubble here. I really have.
Too.
It seems to me that this regulation acts prospectively, and any time in the future that there is no SAV on his leased oyster grounds, he is entitled to harvest and put these structures on his leased oyster ground.
Mm-hmm. I guess, you know, I guess it goes back to what constitutes existing. And, you know, that probably isn't that clear in that regulation. It has been made more clear in the new fisheries regulation, and that it requires some consultation with them. And it may be that, you know, that needs to be addressed.
One of the other things you have to keep in mind, we run through this with reg applications for access channels through SAV. You know, we utilize the VIMS maps, which take into account the distribution and the grow out over the year period, whether it's eelgrass or widgeon grass. If you rely just on the presence or absence of SAV, I can tell you there are times you can go out to any site in the bay and there's no SAV, which means you can go ahead and do whatever you want to do, whether it's dredge or put structures down, only to realize after the fact, 3 months down the road, when the SAV comes back, that in fact it was there all the time. So it's not so much a question of, you know, is it on March 8th, 2008, present or not. You know, we really rely on the VIMS assessment as to where it is, what the trends are, and what the maps show as far as the distribution.
This is an SAV stand, basically.
Correct.
Maybe dormant or something like that, but it's considered to be an SAV stand.
Correct. That's why Chip had put in the maps, which right. are what we use from our scientific advisors to give us an indication of where that resource is.
I have a question for Mr. Grab.
Excuse me. Sir. Dr. Mahan.
Yeah. All this grandfathering is being tossed back and forth. You've been around for a while. What exactly was grandfathered at Cherry Stone and some of the other ones?
Well, you'll have to realize that when we did the regulation in 98, it really was to try to address the impacts that the clam, and was primarily on the Eastern Shore, that the clam grow outs, Cherry Stone and their tenants, were having on SAV. What the regulation was designed to do, and it was not really so much for existing nets, existing structures, but basically, at the time that it was adopted, there were areas that one could delineate were being used for grow out. And those areas, you know, we said weren't really an expansion, even if you came back in and changed some of the trays, changed some of the nets. But having something in one area didn't allow an expansion, you know, into other areas where SAV was. So we would say yes. And I think that's what Mr. Robbins was trying to do. If one outlined the area that was prevalent and being used by Mr. DeMarco in 1998, even if there's SAV in that area now, that area doesn't really constitute an expansion, even if the nets have changed over the intervening 9 years.
Yeah. I just see that I have it on a good authority that it was a very loose interpretation on the Eastern Shore when this came around. And expansion did occur in areas that possibly in the future could have had SAVs that didn't have SAVs when they planted them. Just like you see here, this does not show any appreciable SAVs in the area that he's applying for, although in the past it did, in the future it may. I think this is, you know, not something that's a widespread problem in the bay as far as existing areas being permitted under this grandfather clause. This is an opportunity, you know, for an aquaculture process to continue operations, and I feel that the biggest proponent or against aquaculture is as some guys are saying, you can't do it on a small level, that a mom-and-pop operation can't do it. This is an example of that it can happen, and it does happen. And I don't think we should shut it down, you know, on a dicing of words of what's existing, what's not, you know, from, you know, do we go from this area? Do we go from this area? Do we move it over here? He's over many, many years, it's not a newcomer, has found out where it works. If it worked over here, he would have put it over here. If it worked down here, he would have put it here. But it's here because it works. And I'd like to see us be able to. However, I know we can't. Seems like we can't give that approval today. Or we possibly can give that approval today if we say that the use of this area here constitutes the use of this area here also. And I would like to make a motion that we give him the benefit of the grandfather and allow him to have this operation as it stands, and he's applying for.
As he's applying for it today.
I'd like to second.
But
wait a second. I've got a second on the motion. Okay, Mr. Fox.
But what you're saying in your motion, I just want to understand the motion, is that he would be allowed to use that perimeter and that perimeter only, recognizing that his oyster grounds.
That's correct.
Extend down much further.
It's obvious that we've had continual growth of SAVs here in this area here. Even in the die-off era, there was still some prevalent. It's So, yes, we are containing it to the area that he's applying for today. If he needs any more area, he has to come back and apply for that.
Okay, and your motion also includes allowing him to keep the pipe.
Yeah.
And what about the net?
Predator net.
I think the predator net is important to keep the cow nose rays out of that area, unless somebody here has some different opinion on the net.
But your motion included the net.
It does for discussion purposes. Yes.
Okay. There's a motion on the floor, and there's a second.
Mr. McCluskey seconded
the motion. So let me paraphrase it. The motion is for the applicant to be able to keep what he's applied for, which is up in the top right hand corner, with the pipe and the predator net as it's proposed in the picture. It has been used. Is there any other questions?
I think Mr. Schick makes some good points. SAV is near and dear to my heart, and I'd like to see more of it in the bay. However, watermen are also near and dear to my heart, and I'd like to see more of them in the bay. So we find ourselves in a bit of a twixt and tween on this, and I would agree with the motion, although I think the applicant would be better served to come before us on the vertical nature of the net. So I would make an amended motion that is the same as Mr. Schick's without the net.
I'll take that.
Without the predator.
Yeah.
Without the predator net.
Predator net, excuse me.
Right. Come back and apply for that.
Okay. Everybody's heard the, you've agreed to the amended motion. You agree with the amended motion? Second of the
yes,
motion, agree to it? Okay. All in favor, signify by saying aye.
Aye.
Opposed?
Aye.
One opposed, motion carries.
I think you had a question, but...
Oh, I'm sorry. What was your question?
Clarification from the applicant.
I'm sorry, sir. I overlooked you, Mr. Dunn.
Right, you're done. trying to... Maybe it's a conversation for Chip. The exclusion net is pretty essential to the operation. I mean, I think without it... Mr. DeMarco would tell you that he's going to have pretty serious issues with respect to his aquaculture farm in pretty short order. If that's something we can do fairly quickly, like next month or something, I'm just not sure what you have in mind when you...
I have no problem with you coming back next month. Does anybody? No.
That was one of the things that was actually included in the application was the predator net.
Oh, he did include.
That's a matter for.
Okay, then we can take that issue up now.
Right now.
Okay.
As a separate issue, we can take that up now.
I would ask that you authorize me.
Yes, we will take that issue up right now.
Exclusion net so that Mr. DeMarco can continue his family operation in a way that protects his investment in clam seeds.
I have one question. Is the net up just for like a three-month period? Is that...
Mr. DeMarco?
Mr. Schick, we put that up. Cow nose rays usually make their appearance sometime in the middle of May. May the 10th, they show up in the pound nets. Try to get it up no later than May 15th, and it's down by November. And I don't have my pictures here, I guess. It rises and falls with a tide. The first year we had it up, we had it up. No, not the first. Yeah, I guess we did. First 2 or 3 years we had it up, we had PVC stakes along the perimeter and rings around the stakes in an attempt to hold that net in place. And then we started hearing about, well, maybe you better take that net down. So we wanted to have a smaller visual impact. So we took the stakes out and found another way to anchor the net to the bottom so that when the squalls come in, it'll lay the net over so that it actually rises and falls with the tide. In all honesty, I cannot say that net has any adverse impact upon the SAV where it goes through, if there's any at all. I mean, you would see wear marks, you'd see from erosion, you'd see it chewed out, but that has not been the case. I can't say enough for the net, not only just from my own personal selfish point of view, but for the environment. I just, to me, you are really missing something that would be quite beneficial in the whole aquaculture industry. I'm not saying that the big, huge operators on the Eastern Shore could do it, but I'm saying for small operations like this, we need it, and it's good for the environment.
Okay. The matter is before the committee.
Can I ask a question of staff on that? Bob or Chip, could you all comment on the use of these types of excluding devices? I mean, I know there were, in the past, there were some use on an experimental basis, but what is
I'm
the current practice?
Maybe two or three that came before the commission that were approved. They have typically been not approved over on the Eastern Shore.
I would just comment that based on the photographs that we've received, the net certainly is not a hazard of navigation.
No, I don't see that either. Any other comment, Mr. Tanker?
Mr. Holland, I might mention I have some experience with the agriculture industry over the last decade or so, and it seems to me that what I've seen, the same counters raised population will migrate up on the Eastern Shore, both seaside and bayside, and keeping a net cleaner and changed more frequently has been the strategy of successful players in mitigating the damage of Kano's rays. And so a net might work, but I believe also that frequent change of nets so that that algae doesn't take hold of the net and the Kano's ray can use that to bounce up and down and create this this vacuum to create a hole in the mud and then get into the nets that are on the bottom, not the nets that are, okay, perpendicular to the bottom.
Any other comments?
Experience.
I have a question. On this particular case, has anybody noticed that there's been an adverse effect caused by the net on the personal visits to the site?
We've not gotten any detailed comments yet from BMD or for DGIF on the net, because up until our site visit last week, we still weren't even sure what the actual mesh size was. That was kind of critical, I believe, in the evaluation of it. We don't have that information. We were looking at it as much as anything else from a public trust issue. I mean, that's essentially cordoning off over 4 acres of Spakway's bottom. So.
Okay. The matter is before the commission.
For a matter of discussion, I move that we approve the net as requested.
I'll second.
Motion.
I'll second.
Dr. McCanahay seconds. All in favor, signify by saying aye.
Aye.
Opposed?
No.
Aye.
Two nays and one aye. Motion carries. Item 7, ABH LLC.
What did you vote on?
JBH LLC is requesting authorization to retain a 180-foot long by 5-foot 10 inches wide private non-commercial pier with a 40-foot by 20-foot covered platform, a 12-foot 10 inches by 3-foot ramp over a 6-foot by 5-foot platform, leading to a 14-foot by 16-foot 8 inches platform and a 10 by 12-foot floating platform adjacent to property at 475 Windmill Point Road.